Moshe Hadayat from the Netherlands is calling. I think we'll ask him to just open the class with an invocation. Okay. Hadayat? Hello?
Hello.
It's a hello from all of us here in Kansas City. We send our love.
Well, thank you so much. I'm very deeply impressed. I've been saying coming to Chicago. Did I say the invocation?
Would you be willing to do that for us to start our class? We have been a few months in stasis here, and we're kind of beginning a new cycle of teachings, and it would be wonderful, Mersha Tadayat, if you'd sort of bless this inaugural class again.
Should I say it right now?
Yes, that would be wonderful. Thank you.
Hallelujah.
Hello, Aziza.
Hello, Aziza.
Hello, Aziza.
Yes, that would be wonderful. We're ready to begin. And we send our love to you. So when you say it, then we'll allow you to go on. I know you're so busy there. And we'll disconnect for you, and then we'll continue with the class. But we appreciate you joining us for these few moments. And we send our love. Mom's here, and she's doing really well. So we send... Thank you.
Harmony and beauty, the only being united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the spirit of guidance. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Love you.
Love you.
So that's Mershad Hadayat, who's the head of the International Sufi Movement, who resides in part of the time in Holland and part of the time in Germany. And he is the son of Hazrat Anayat Khan. A little picture here of Hazrat Anayat Khan. Most of you know who this is. Brought the teachings of universal Sufism to the West in 1910. Not a new religion at all. It was the message of unity and respect for all religions. So in a way, it was more of a creating a universal brotherhood and sisterhood where beyond all caste, creed, and distinctions and differences. So Mershad Hadayat is the son of Hazrat Anayat Khan. And Mershad Hadayat, we're blessed to have him with us. He's living a long life at 94 years old. So. Yeah. And they're still up and sounds quite chipper at, well, I don't know, it's quite late there, 9 or 10.
It's okay.
There, or there's some chairs in the back, kind of, if you're comfortable there, that's fine. Those that are new to the class, I'm using what's known as a Tibetan medicine bowl or Tibetan singing bowl. It's made of different metals that are said to resonate with the vibratory levels of the subtle centers of the body. And you can kind of hear that, those different tonalities. So to relax in your breath. toward you. For this time, practice the art of being at home in your own body. No grasping, no thought of past and no thought of future, just this moment. We're listening to the bowl. Begin your own invocation, where you invite those that have inspired you. The great teachers of the past and the present. To join us and bless this time together. Ask the Holy Ones to open our hearts, illuminate our minds, share their presence with us. All the Master Saints and Prophets. With palms upward, let us again together say the Sufi invocation of Hazrat Inayat Khan. And if you don't know the invocation, all you have to do is invoke in your own way, in your own mind, again, those that inspire you, that have illuminated your heart and mind. And fill your hands with light. Feel the stream of blessings. coming through this golden chain of masters, saints, and prophets into the living presence. And listen carefully to each other's voices so that we speak in harmony and balance and beauty together. Towards the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. Take your hands filled with this light and pour it over your being. Filling yourself and pouring over yourself this beautiful light. So today we begin a new cycle of teachings. Perhaps it was auspicious that we would have a little break due to life circumstances, but here today we begin a body of teachings on inner culture. It's a body of teachings that's given by Hazar Benayat Khan that teaches us the development of personality, the art of character, and the nobility of the soul with democracy of the personality. So how to touch that inner part of our being while in a way kind of managing those parts of our being that are our characteristics that perhaps we've inherited through this lifetime. In my view, this body of teachings, along with the teachings on breath, are probably the two most profound aspects of these teachings of Hazar Benayat Khan. Because if we spend a lot of effort trying to change the world, it's pretty futile. But if we change ourselves, the world changes. Mahatma Gandhi said, "We must be the change we wish to see in the world." I might check to see who that is, Joe. So again, Mahatma Gandhi says, "We must be the change we wish to see in the world." The rhythm of the class is such that we have readings and then we do practices and we go back and forth in that way. The first reading is from a book titled The Flower Garden of Anayat Khan. Love, in reality, creates harmony in one's life on earth and peace in heaven. Love, in reality, creates harmony in one's life and peace in heaven. Well, we could probably stop here and meditate just on this one phrase for the next several hours. I mean, how profound that is that? If we're not in love, we're in fear. If we're not in love, we're out of balance. If we're not in love, we're in hate. He says here, if we're in love, love in reality creates harmony. I mean, who amongst us hasn't been in love and doesn't wish to harmonize with the beloved? We're quite unhappy when things are not harmonious. Love in reality creates harmony in one's life. And he goes on to say, on earth, and peace in heaven. So when we love, we're not only creating a reality here on earth, but we're contributing to that atmosphere of heaven. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Same sentiment. Or in Aramaic, it's Om. Abundamashmaya Tite Malkotar. O Mother, Father, Birther of the Cosmos, the one who exists in all realms of light and vibration. Same sentiment, different language. But there's no difference when it's the language of the heart or the language of love. This is a universal language. Small book titled Universal Sufism, Path of Breath, Prayer, and Zikr. This is on the subject of breath, and this is leading us up to our first practice. It is difficult to define breath in a few words. Breath is the very life in beings, and what holds all particles of the body together is the power of the breath. And when this power becomes less, then the will loses control over the body. As the power of the sun holds all the planets, so the power of the breath holds every organ. Besides this, the breath purifies the body by taking in new and fresh life, and by giving out all gases that should be put out. It nourishes the body by absorbing from space the spirit and substance that are necessary, and more necessary than all that man eats and drinks. The whole mechanism of the body works by the power of the breath, and every disorder in the working of the mechanism is caused by some irregularity of the breath. Therefore, physicians feel disorder in the health of a patient by feeling his pulse or the beats of his heart. The physician will say that it is the physical illness of the body which has caused the change in the pulsation and in the beats of the heart. But the mystic knows that it is caused by the breath. The breath, in its different aspects, acts differently. In every direction, the breath does a special work. In every direction, the breath does a special work. The breath has a special work with every organ of the body. And it has its particular influence upon every element of which the fittest physical body consists. So I'll break here for a moment in the reading, and for those of us that have been following the teachings where we've been practicing the purification breaths and the elemental breaths, you will recall that there is a direction to each one of those breaths. And here Murshid is giving us an indication that those have very specific purposes. And we will be doing one of those breath practices in a few moments, and just be mindful of that, and I'll try to help as we are guided through that practice. And back to the reading. Every movement that one makes is directed by the power of the breath. At the same time, the breath alone has the power to stop any motion. Okay, you have to really pay attention to what's being said here. Every movement that one makes is directed by the power of the breath. At the same time, the breath alone has the power to stop any motion. This means it has the capacity to avert anything coming at you that's dangerous, the possibility and the potential to avert the increase of illness, the possibility of averting and blocking negative intentions that perhaps are directed at you through someone's envy or jealousy, which is, of course, a form of ignorance. Who can fault them? But it comes just the same. We're all humans. We all have these lower ways of thinking. Perhaps it can even stop ourselves when we are about to take a wrong action towards someone, or something that can be harmful to ourselves. The breath can do that. In other parts of the teachings, Anayat Khan talks that breath can bring about success or failure. And putting thoughts on the breath have a great power. Back to the reading. For instance, walking, running, sitting, and standing are actions done by the power of the breath. And trembling, shivering, or waving the hands or feet without control show lack of power of the breath. So you are probably aware of people that constantly have to tap on something. Maybe you yourself do that nervously. Or the foot is going like this a lot. This is what Murshid's talking about. This is all energy. Can you feel it? I'm having to use energy. Even if it's rhythmic, it's still... You see, it changes the vibration in the atmosphere. Diseases, especially such diseases as nervousness, palpitation of the heart, and paralysis, come from lack of power of the breath. All lung diseases are caused by unclearness of the breath. Now I can tell you, and some of you have been witness to that, we've gone traveling and giving workshops. We've actually had people at our workshops that are on oxygen, who by the end of the workshop are free of that oxygen tank just by watching the breath and doing the breath practices. It's helped people also with asthmatic conditions or sinuses. The breath can help. Well, the breath can do everything. Without it, we're dead. Troubles of the brain and troubles of the intestine are caused by lack of regularity of breathing. You know, sometimes even if you can't poopsie quite right, if you start breathing in your abdomen, things will move around a little bit. This is all the breath. This shows that breath is the key to health, which is all happiness in life. If we don't have our health, we don't have very much. Just ask a wealthy person if they had all the wealth in the world or the health in the world, which one would they choose? So I like to highlight some of these teachings because I find them very practical. In one sense, they're mystical. In another sense, they're very practical. This is nothing hocus-pocus or mysterious. This is very practical message of how to create balance in our lives. And all we have to do is, this is a great biofeedback system, the body and the breath. When we're agitated, the breath is a certain way. When we're relaxed, the breath is a certain way. When we feel happy, the breath is a certain way. When we're frustrated, the breath is a certain way. When we're angry, just watch it. And just by putting another thought on the breath, can create a whole other feeling. It will set a whole set of neurofunctions in order to create stimulation in the hypothalamus, the pineal glands, all of these functions, the endocrine system, the lymphatic system. It all starts to buzz at a different, vibration, just with the thought and the breath. Changing the vibration. So, I'd like to share a practice that we've done many times together and we will do many times together. And this is the purification breaths as given by Hazarat and Anayat Khan. Anayat Khan was a student of Raja Yoga, the science of the breath as given by the great Maha Yogi Shiva. Was passed down, of course, through the Patanjali Sutras, codified language of breath. But here the purification breath. What does that mean, purification breath? And why do we do it? And why do we do it every day, I guess, is a good question. Anyone venture a guess, by the way? Or a thought? Or an experience? Why would we do these purification breaths every day? There may be people that are practitioners that have something to contribute, otherwise it would just be a guess for others. Anything?
Balance.
Yeah. And I think it's important also that they're called purification breaths, which are distinct but aligned with the elemental breaths, the unique practice independent of each other. You know, I love that beautiful phrase that says, "Be ye as little children." It speaks of unlearning. We get very clever as we grow old. We start to learn patterns of behavior so that we can survive, adapt, adjust, be triumphant. These are all learned behaviors. But when we unlearn them, we can become who we really are at that soul level, which is a divine ray. But how can we be that if we're covered? It's like a lantern that's full of dust. The light has become dim. And so by polishing the lantern, cleaning the globe, the light can really truly radiate out. This is what the purification breaths can do. Also, in one's day, we are filled with all kinds of impressions, consciously or unconsciously. We go to a certain place, it has a certain energy, we absorb that. It might be peaceful, it might be hectic, it might be agitated, it might be harmonious, it might be inharmonious. Those impressions are with us. Sometimes they arise again in dreams in the evening. We process that information. But what if we could purify that, cleanse ourselves of that to get more back to our essential self, which Anayat Khan talks about is one of the major goals, finding who we are naturally. What's our natural self? Not our official self, not our learned self, not our learned self either. You know, very intelligent people can be totally fascinated with information. Has nothing to do with illumination. So the breath helps to polish the silver, so to speak, take the tarnish off, clean the globe, so that these are impressions that we carry with us. Murshid Hidayat one time was here in Kansas City visiting us, and he gave us a very practical example. He said, well, it's like, for example, you go to a restaurant and someone's, you know, told you it's just a fantastic restaurant, and you go, and for some reason you don't know it, but the head chef isn't there that night, and there's the more minor chef is cooking, and the food is just awful, and you can't understand why your friend would have told you to go to this restaurant, because you just can't hardly stomach the food, and then you go around telling all these people that this is a terrible restaurant, because that's your impression, and you won't even go back again. And the truth is if you would go back, and the head chef was there, you'd have a delightful meal, but you've got this, you have this impression that prevents you from enjoying that in the future. So we have those impressions, and they're like filters or lenses that we're looking through, that we're assuming is a kind of reality, and it's not at all. Isn't it true? Does anyone wear glasses? A few people do. You remember the first time you got to your glasses and you were like, oh my God, I can see all that stuff so clearly. You remember that? It's like, whoa, that's what it is. It's like kind of clearing things away, bringing things into focus in the inner world. And I was reading today, and I think it was actually the Bowl of Sake, about how the inner world, what was that? It was about the dimensions, the inner dimensions of our reality for the mystic are absolutely reflected in the three-dimensional world. So that inner world, we must work to, you do whatever you wish. I think it's advisable to try to purify that world, beautify that world, harmonize that world, so that that becomes reflected outwardly. Do you agree? Is it a good idea? From those joining us online before we go into the practice. That may be a different reflection of the teachings for them as well. So these are the instructions as given by Hazrat Inayat Khan. The basic purification breathing practice, also called the 20 purification breaths, consists of 4 times inhalations and exhalations as follows. And I'll read this and then we'll do the practice. The first 5, in through the nose and out through the nose. The second 5, in through the nose, out through the mouth. The third 5, in through the mouth, out through the nose. The fourth 5, in through the mouth and out through the mouth. So again, you just notice that we're moving the breath in different directions, and this ties into the previous teaching about every movement or direction of breath has its function and purpose. He goes on to say, it is best that if the practice is done before breakfast, standing in a relaxed position, preferably in the open air or in front of an open window. The feet are stable on the ground, and the knees, shoulders, neck, and jaws are loosened. Inhalations and exhalations are done rhythmically, in a restful, quiet manner, slower than the usual breath, yet slightly fuller. It is important to discover the natural rhythm of one's breath. It is important to discover the natural rhythm of one's breath. Here I like to mention a teaching that is also given on the breath practices by Inayat Khan, where he refers to the breath like a stream, and how a small stream can be influenced by a larger stream or river. And so he's making the analogy here to develop the breath, to understand the rhythm of one's breath, because then it's through the breath that we can be an agent of healing, an agent of harmony, an agent of balance. This has happened, for example, if one is encountering someone that you would prefer give you some distance, you can use the breath to suggest to them in an inward way that they go away, and they will go away. If you're in a public place, this has happened sometimes on an airplane, if there's a crying baby, sometimes just by sending a quiet, calming breath, the baby can pick up that breath rhythm and calm down. If there is an atmosphere where there's maybe been an accident and people are in shock or excited, by standing quietly and calmly with the breath, one can help that atmosphere. So the breath, without imposing, it's an offering of vibration. It's not that we know anything or that we have the answer for another person. We rarely have the answers for ourselves. So healer, heal thyself is another wonderful quote. But this is why Inayat Khan says, it is important to discover the natural rhythm of one's breath, because quite easily we can be overcome by another person's breath. So for no reason we are happy, and then all of a sudden we're just in a really bad mood, and we don't quite know why, because there isn't anything that happened. But there might have been someone that we encountered that we picked up that rhythm of breath. Or we were feeling sad, and then all of a sudden it's dissipated, and it seems like, wow, the sun's shining. Again, maybe someone had a wonderful atmosphere, a rhythm of breath that we picked up. I like the Buddha saying where it says, when you feel like you're trapped, do something different. Change it up. The breath is that way. We can do that for ourselves. Again, we're a great biofeedback system. You don't have to go very far. You can just experiment with your own life, your own experiences. But be mindful of that. Be mindful of the subtleties of vibration. The whole world, science teaches us, is all made of vibrations. Again, this isn't a hocus pocus. There can be a if you know music, it's the same thing. Major and minor keys, sharps and flats, sometimes they're dissonant. You know what harmonizes, what doesn't. It's all there too in music. That's why often Sufis study music. Harmonize themselves. You notice I said study. It's a beautiful system. Noreen, you probably know that from Persia, of the rhythms and the subtleties of vibrations and new numbers and their rhythm and, you know, all of that and the sacred architecture. And, you know, it's all there, that geometry, balance, pattern. There's also a pattern in the breath, rhythm in the breath. So back to the paper. Murshid Anayat Khan says, while inhaling and exhaling, one's thoughts are focused on receiving and radiating the divine power in space, which purifies and revivifies, and which inspires and enables the soul to unfold. While inhaling and exhaling, one's thoughts are focused on receiving and radiating the divine power in space, which purifies and revivifies, and which inspires and enables the soul to unfold. The thought to be kept constantly present in the mind is the following one. While inhaling, I inhale divine light and life. While exhaling, I radiate divine life and light. So when we inhale, the words are light, L-I-G-H-T, and life, L-I-F-E. And when we exhale, they are life, L-I-F-E, and light. L-I-G-H-T, the order reverses. The paper goes on to say, if one is ill or feeling weak, this exercise can be done sitting or even lying down. In the case of delicate breathing organs or of any other internal problem, or if required for the purpose of improving the health, this practice is done twice a day. Morning and evening, or even three times a day if necessary. And Anayat Khan goes on to say, the exercise is the basis of many esoteric exercises and should be mastered before you can understand further mysteries. So this is the foundation of all path, this one practice. Now also, I could say this, that you can, by studying this practice, I asked Murshid Hidayat one time, we were together and someone close to us was quite ill, and they weren't capable of doing the practice themselves. And I said, can we do the practice for their benefit? And he said, yes, let's do that. So again, we can come to these classes and study and read and, you know, whatever, purely for ourselves, and of course it begins there, but ultimately one would hope that one would have this burning desire and love to offer this to others, again, not through our words, through our presence. Not wearing a special robe or a special hat or funny shoes or doing anything like this is not necessary. It's just who we are as a human being. You understand? If you want to wear funny hats and funny shoes and funny robes, that's also okay. But you understand what I'm saying? And the Rome do as the Romans.